Hello, and welcome to our podcast, Within the Mist, a hidden place where we walk into the dark and clouded unknown. I am your EVP monitoring host, Gary, here to entertain and inform you about the likes of cryptids, ghosts, and ghost hunting. I am joined by my spirit box of a co-host and wife, Goldie Ann. But today, we have the privilege of being joined by members of Feeling Paranormal, a husband and wife team of paranormal investigators. Their use of the scientific methods and high-tech equipment bring them to many of the most haunted locations of Central Florida and beyond. Tiffany operates a repurposed book arts Etsy shop when she isn't off into the middle of the night attempting to contact haunting spirits. Ryan has been involved with the paranormal since childhood, when he realized he could see and understand what others could not. He now works as a design consultant for a remodeling company when he's not on an investigations in the middle of the night. So I think it's time to open the attic doors within the mist and welcome Feeling Paranormal to the show.
Hey guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, thanks for having us.
Yes.
No, it's great. I'm glad that you guys could make it. I have so many questions to ask you, but I did have one that I wanted to especially ask for you, Tiffany.
Okay.
Due to your expertise with ghosts, what is a ghost's favorite makeup to wear?
Oh, man. I don't know. I noticed it's one of your jokes.
I get it that it sounds like Ryan is the expert here. Go ahead, Ryan.
You said concealer.
I said concealer.
That's concealer good was good, but I was looking for mascara.
Oh,
dang it. That's a good one. I like it.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Yes.
They love dad jokes.
Yes.
As do I. Well, I appreciate you coming on to the show. We've gotten to hang out with you on some of your investigations before, but there were so many more questions I wanted to ask you. Like, in the beginning, how did you guys get interested in the field of paranormal investigations?
Well, for me, it's kind of like what I said in the beginning. Very, very early on in life, I kind of had a realization that I could see or understand things that not everybody else would see. So I don't see ghosts in the particular way of it directly in the room. I kind of get it more in a, almost like a photograph in my head, is how it appears to me more often than not. And, I guess I'll say, where some parents will say, you know, that's your imaginary friend, or no, you don't really see those kinds of things. My mom was great in the fact that she actually kind of, instilled it within me and would kind of push it a little bit more and say, okay, well, you know, what else do you feel? What else do you see? And it runs in her lineage as well. So it's always been there. For me, I the paranormal and getting into ghost hunting and doing these investigations, I always kind of joke around, for me, it's actually just kind of trying to prove myself that I'm not crazy. So by using these, different, you know, your K2s and all the different equipment that we do, it just helps me kind of put a scientific edge to a sense that I have. So that was the big part for me.
So you started having these kind of experiences as a young child. You never considered it frightening at that time?
I guess maybe I'll say for me, I was lucky enough. It happened early enough that it just kind of was a thing. You know, I think if it would have hit me when I was a teenager, it might have struck me completely different. By then, I would have seen enough movies that I would have, I might have looked at it a little differently. But, and then I do remember going to my mom and saying, hey, I've seen this little boy in our house. And she'd say, well, I have too. What did you see? What did you experience? And so that kind of takes the edge away, I guess I'll say.
Wow.
That is awesome.
And for you, Tiffany, how did you get started?
Well, I'm totally on the other side of the spectrum of that, 100%. I would see stuff in the traditional sense, like I would see apparitions frequently, actually, when I was little. I can remember being on the bus when I was in kindergarten, and we would always go past this one house every afternoon on the way home from school. And almost every day in one of the top windows, there would be a little girl up in the window with like a nightgown on and a bonnet, and she would be holding a candle. And I would see her almost every day. And I was so afraid to see her because I was like, okay, I don't think anybody else sees her. I don't know what's going on. And then one day I realized there was another girl that was staring at the same spot. And she goes to me, "You see her too, don't you?" And then we would look for her every day. But it scared me to death because my parents never talked about it. Not at all. Come to find out now that I'm adult, my dad has a ridiculously large amount of ghost stories. And I literally did not know any of them until this past year. And I was basically terrified of ghosts and everything until about 4 years ago. And then I decided, because I have anxiety and it kind of helps me with that, that it didn't have to be as scary as I was making it. And why was I making it so scary? Why don't I look at it more as a way to learn things and to conquer my own anxiety? And I just kind of went head on into it and just kept going. And it is not scary anymore, except if you try to spend the night at a jail, and then it's scary.
Then you guys came together and created Feeling Paranormal. Is that correct?
Yep.
And how long has that been running?
It has been a official incorporated business for about a year and a half, but we were doing it before that, but we've technically got our like a business license in the state of Florida and our insurance about a year and a half ago, but we were doing it for about another 2 years before that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
So what was your first official investigation then?
It was the Opera House.
Would have been the Opera House, yep. Yeah.
It's now called the Heard Opera House, but it was the Arcadia Opera House.
Mm-hmm. And how did that come about?
I was actually looking online for other people that were doing like group investigations and stuff like that, so we could kind of go with a bunch of people. And I came across a group that was hosting a group investigation there, and it was like $20 a person. And I was like, hey, let's go to this. And now I love the Opera House, and we're really good friends with the owner, Danny, and his wife. And right now it's in construction from the hurricane, but we are planning some big things there that I can't quite say what's going to be going on yet, but it's going to be exciting.
Wow, that's so amazing.
Yes.
Nice.
And you guys are obviously invited to come to that. Yay. When I announce it as
absolutely.
Well. and it may be more than one thing. So yeah. We're working on it with them.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
So how do you choose your locations?
She was very, I'll give you all the credit to this completely, because she's been very diligent, not only researching, I'd say, spots within about a 3-hour radius of where we are, and then just simply reaching out. Sometimes you get a yes, sometimes you get a no, sometimes it's, you know, no answer whatsoever. And then as we've kind of had an opportunity to work with a few of like Sarasota County and Manatee County, and that's opened up a few more ends for us as well. But in the beginning, it's kind of like anything else. It's almost just knocking on doors and hoping they just say yes.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many emails you sent out, but it had to be hundreds.
A lot. It was a lot of emails.
And finally got a few people to just say, yeah, sure. Let's do it. Sounds great. And we've built some pretty amazing relationships with some of the places around here. Mm-hmm. And it's great.
And now we're starting to get some calls and emails back from places that we've been, and they'll be like, oh, well, can you look at this other building that we have as well? And a lot of it, it would be like places that I've been to since I've lived here, because I've been here since I was about four, that I would be like, well, you know, I used to go to, just like we went to the Tatum house. I was like, I would go there on field trips with the kids. And I'm like, something feels a little bit funky here. And like we did the Edson Keith Mansion and the farmhouse recently. And that's another place where when I was about 12 or 13 years old, I went to a wedding there, and there was a little boy there that I kept seeing repeatedly throughout the night. And I kept asking and asking, who's the little boy? Who's the little boy? And they would go, honey, the only other kid here than you is the flower girl.
Nice.
Yep. And we got to investigate there. And it certainly does seem like there may be a little boy that is there.
Yeah.
So that's.
Yeah, we had a great experience there. And
oh, yeah.
At the end of the investigation, when the curator was back in, I was asking a few questions. I was like, so, you know, because I want to go into an area completely blind. I
want to research the heck out of it and know everybody's everything.
The less I can know, the better off I feel about it. So that way I can go in and any feelings or anything that I get aren't persuaded, I guess, by pictures or whatnot. So, but we got to the end and I said, the younger boy that lived here used to love to play hide and seek. And I'm guessing played hide and seek with one of the maids that was here and spent a lot of time up in the attic. And I described him as blonde hair, kind of long, a little bit curly, blue eyes, and, you know, wore this kind of, she just continued to get a little more pale and her jaw just a little further down. And she's like, yes, that would be exactly right. So,
And I hadn't told him of that. I keep it to myself. I have my notebook where I have all my names and all my stuff written down.
Yeah.
But
yeah, you're the planner. And
I am.
And I'm just the kind of go at it and call, you know, and see how it goes. But.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the farmhouse, because I wanted to ask you, what is the difference between locations of buildings versus farmhouses versus cemeteries? Do you find the hauntings different from these different types of structures?
That's a very interesting question.
I would say with a cemetery, you're going to get a lot of different, I guess I'll say a lot of different entities, a mix of feelings and probably a little more of what I want to say, like a residual, more so than you would at certain locations, where if it was a factory or a home or a farmhouse where, you know, people spent a lot of their time there, where I really kind of feel like that's the main difference, is you're going to get a little more intelligent responses when it was someone's home for a very long period of time. Not to say that you won't in a cemetery by any means. And it also depends a lot on the person themselves. You know, if their want and drive and desire is to really kind of build their craft in order to be able to get a hold of you and get your attention, then I don't think it matters where you are, because that's their drive and desire. They have something they want to tell you, and they're going to, and who knows? I mean, some of the cemeteries around here, these people have been there for 100 years, you know, so they've had 100 years to kind of sit back and think and develop their way of, hey, there's someone here and I think they're looking for me. So, hey, I'm right here and I'm going to come across, you know, through one of your devices or try and touch you or whatever it may be to get your attention. Mm-hmm. So, if you get someone like that, then I don't think it matters where you are, but, you're more likely, I think, to get a response that's directed to the location when it's not a cemetery. Cemetery, you have so many different people, and not only that, but you have other people who have visited there, and you know, it's a hotbed of energy and emotion, all the way through and through. So,
for sure.
but at a house or a business or whatever, chances are it's that same, you know, we'll say Mr. Jones worked there for 35 years. You know, he's got some time and energy invested in that place. Same thing with a home. I had a great experience up in Illinois when I was living up there and wanting to, I wanted to buy a home, and we were looking in a historic district, and I walked into this house and immediately got this just overwhelming pressure. And I took about two steps in and I looked at the realtor and I said, "We're not buying this house. We can go ahead and go on to the next one." And she said, "Well, what is it?" And I said, "Well, the husband passed probably about, I'm going to say 10 to 12 years ago. He is here. He is in the basement. This is his home. It has always been his home. His wife still lives here. He wants no one to buy this home. And I am surely not going to be the person that does." And so you can come across those things where it is just overwhelmingly obvious. I won't say, you know, sometimes the TV shows do a great job of exaggerating, and sometimes I don't think they do at all. So, but in that case, he was absolutely going to make it very aware that was his home, that was his family's home. You aren't family. Please move on.
So there's a perception that it's where a person dies that becomes the haunted location. You don't find that to be always true, correct?
Absolutely not.
No.
Yeah.
I think, you know, a haunting can be caused by numerous things. It doesn't have to be a tragedy or a death or anything like that at all. It can be anywhere where there's any type of an intense emotion,
connection.
Yeah. Theaters is a place where you find a lot of hauntings because, you know, the actors are putting everything they have into the character that they're being, and people are laughing, people are crying, people, you know, or if it's like a concert hall and, you know, everybody's jumping up and down and excited and they're just pouring their energy into that place. Just places that would have a lot of energy going on, or a lot of military places sure, will have some type of a haunting as well, because there's just so much feeling and emotion attached to the area, or maybe even their items that they had with them. So,
yeah.
But certainly, you know, deaths can obviously cause it as well, because, you know, it could be an intense emotion if somebody passed away suddenly or whatever, but there's a lot of things that can cause it.
And again, these are, you know, it's pretty much our hypothesis on a lot of this. You know, unfortunately, by the time we'll actually know the right answer, then we're on the other side of the EVP.
Yeah.
You know, so we've got to try and maybe give a better answer back. But you know, that's the other part that I really truly enjoy about the paranormal, and actually getting out and doing these a hunt is you do get this information back, and it is a little bit open for interpretation. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of neat to me, is just seeing that and getting other people really to a chance to experience that as well.
Mm-hmm. I like that. So yeah, you were talking about giving other people the opportunity to experience that. When you're trying to set up these haunts and you're asking the locations, do you find resistance or do you find a lot of openness? You know, are people willing to admit that their place is haunted, or do you think they want to try and hush it up?
Well,
yes and yes.
Yes and yes. We have come across a lot of places that said, basically, we have stuff here, but we're not going to acknowledge it, and we don't really want to put it out there. Like, I literally had an email response one time that said, out of respect for those who may still be here, we would like to not explore this option because we wouldn't want to upset any of them. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, okay. So you've pretty much just said, yes, mm-hmm. it's here, but we're not going to do that. Yeah. And then there's some other places where, like the Tatum House and Dixie was just like, yeah, there is something special about this place. She would say, you know, I just know it. She's a scientist. So she wants, you know, hard evidence that you can see. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she said to us, yeah, absolutely. We want you here. Also, it depends on what time of year you ask them, because people who don't really want to talk much about it, if you start asking them in the beginning of September, if you can come in October, they're going to be like, heck yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've noticed that a lot of bed and breakfast or hotel type places, they're the ones that have the experiences, but a lot of times they don't want to admit to it because right. they don't want to scare away customers. So
sure, absolutely.
Yep.
I mean, there's still definitely a taboo about it, you know, where certain people obviously are going to be very excited to hear, oh my gosh, you know, there's a haunted bed and breakfast that we can go to. That'd be great. Other people are going to be like, yeah, absolutely I wanted to go not. There. Absolutely not. You know, I want nothing to do with that. And of course, as a business owner, you know, you have to respect that. So, you know, but yeah, but definitely
there is actually one, I won't name it. But the previous owners very much advertised it as a haunted bed and breakfast. And the new owner now wants nothing to do with it, does not believe in paranormal at all. But said, you know, if you wanted to come in, yeah, I guess you could do that if you wanted to, you know, rent out some of the rooms. Yeah. And if you wanted to come down into my area, I guess you could too. I don't think you'll find anything. But I mean, it has this long, it has a long list of history to it.
Yeah. I know when we are going out and we're going to stay at a bed and breakfast, that's kind of like Goldie Ann's first question. Is it haunted? She specifically looks for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, you know what? Maybe I'll drop you a message later and tell you which one it is, because I want to get some people together to go to that one.
But they were very apprehensive in the beginning.
They were.
When we first reached out to them, it was pretty much a flat no, not going to happen. And then about a month and a half later, they reached back out, and that's when they said, well, we might entertain.
You know,
if you were going to rent out a few of the rooms, I suppose we could let some. So I kind of want to know on the back end, you know, anytime you get an immediate 180 like that, okay, something happened. And now he's like, okay, I want to know for myself. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Now, Tiffany, you mentioned earlier that you do all the research beforehand. How do you go about researching? I mean, do you go to libraries? Is this an internet type thing? I figure it'd be kind of hard to investigate hauntings.
It is, but I actually asked that very question to Miss Amy Bruni from Kindred Spirits when I had the chance to meet her earlier this year about how she does her investigating.
And she said, hire a team of people and then they just do it for you.
No, she does a lot of her own investigating. The easiest way to do it, and I have had great results with this, is if you go to like the county property appraiser and you get the names of the people who have owned it, then you take the specific names and you start doing internet searches about the specific people, not just the house, not just the area. And then you start pulling up more and more information using their specific names and the family names and going back and just researching each name. Then you start finding so much stuff. It's actually unreal. And I hadn't thought about it in that way because I was researching from the point of like, oh, okay, well, what's the history, you know, of this building? And that's not necessarily going to give you the family history, you know? So that makes a big difference. But you got to go pretty far back.
Yes.
And imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple websites. I think it's floridamemory.com that has a lot of historical documentation and photos and just kind of records and whatnot. And you can find some really good stuff on there too.
Okay. So then you have all this in your, you know, little magic notebook. And then Ryan goes in there, you know, cold. Mm-hmm. And then what do? You guys compare notes afterwards to see what matches?
Well, I'll usually walk in and after he's been there for about 10 minutes, I'll be like, so what are you feeling?
Yeah.
What are you feeling? What do you think is going on here?
Or there,
where do you feel something?
Or she's still talking to the curator and I've wandered off.
Yep.
A lot of times, and that probably doesn't always look great, but I'll get to a location and we'll start talking and then I'll get pulled in a certain direction. And I just need to go figure out what exactly it is that's trying to grab my attention or, you know, and take a little bit of time with that. And then usually by the end of the night, we've had a chance to kind of compare, okay, this is the notes of who was here and this mm-hmm. is kind of what I'm feeling and what I believe what we've uncovered. And a lot of times it does match up. Sometimes it's a little different. You know, Arcadia Opera House is always the interesting one for me because there's one room that the minute we go in, I'm immediately pulled back into this back left room. I'll take our portal in there and my name gets pulled up several times.
Oh, constantly through the spirit box. Ryan,
yeah,
Ryan, yeah. Where's Ryan? Don't go, yeah. Ryan. Yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh.
And so I'd say I've probably gotten about three or four different people in that room, but I can't always say that it's always going to match up because spirits roam is one thing. So you may be at a house that is well known, you know, like where we just were. Mm-hmm. And not only from that standpoint, but there were a lot of artifacts in that house that weren't particularly from that home. And then there was a lot of history in that area. So it's not real uncommon to have maybe something that happened just a little ways away from you all of a sudden appear at that home. Mm-hmm. You know, you're an antenna or a beacon of light. And the other thing is, and as you got a chance to see, we do bring a few different devices with us that are all powered up and ready to go. And of course, if you're a spirit trying to grab in energy to talk to someone, well, we got to be really lit up in the middle of the night compared to a lot of the spots around there. So you're gonna possibly bring in some things from outside that area as mm-hmm. well. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I'm glad you brought up about your equipment because, we did get a firsthand experience at the boxes upon boxes of equipment that you bring in your investigation.
At the May Stringer House.
Yeah. Yep.
So what kind of equipment do you feel works the best on these type of paranormal investigations?
Well,
I'll let you run and then I'll go. Yeah.
My most favorite thing in the world, as you know, is the Estes method or the spirit box experiment, some people call it. And that is literally just a spirit box. And you plug your headphones into it, like some real good noise canceling headphones, and close your eyes or wear a blindfold, sleeping mask, whatever. Yep, sensory deprivation. And then somebody else asks questions and then you sometimes will hear things coming through the spirit box and that's listening to the spirit box, you don't hear or see anything that's going on outside. And so I think that that's one of the coolest experiments, and it is so weird to go back later and listen to the evidence or watch the video of it and be like, oh my gosh, you know, that did make sense. Because as you're saying it, you're like, there's no way this makes sense. But just like when we were at the Tatum house and you guys were there and we were asking questions, I'm listening to that back and I'm like, oh my gosh, that makes so much sense. So headphones, Spirit Box, and Blindfold. That's my favorite.
And then
Just real quick, for those who aren't familiar, can you give a brief description of what a Spirit Box is and how it works?
Yes. Okay. So a Spirit Box is basically like, it sounds like a broken radio. It's a tiny little box, and you will turn it on, and you can turn it on to AM or FM. And then you can basically scan through stations, and you can adjust it to go really fast, forwards or backwards. And basically what you're listening for is things that don't sound like music. Or a radio ad. And I think with doing the Estes method with the headphones and not being able to see, I think that adds more validity to it because you cannot see what's going on and you can't hear what's going on. So anything that you're saying, you're just hearing that and you're saying it out. So it's not as easy to maybe misconstrue what's coming through because maybe you're looking for that answer to come through. You know, if you're saying, you know, oh, who is here? And you hear something and you're automatically looking for a name. So if you hear something that sounds like part of a name, you're going to be like, oh my gosh, that was a name, you know? So that would be like, that would be audio pareidolia, which is basically where your brain is trying to make sense of something that it didn't really understand. And it's filling in the gaps to make it something that's familiar to you. Like regular pareidolia would be like if you are looking up at the clouds and you see a cloud and you're like, oh my gosh, that cloud looks just like a T-Rex. Well, you know, that's your interpretation of it. That's what you're seeing. Or like when you're looking at a slab of wood and you're like, oh, wow, that looks like a smiling face right there. It looks like two eyes and a mouth. Well, you know, it's not, but that's what your brain is perceiving it as because that's what you know, that's what's familiar to you. So using the headphones and everything, I think that takes a lot of that away. And so it makes it a little bit more interesting.
Well, it's also a lot more interesting when you come out of it.
Yes. Oh,
yeah. You're 100% on your own. And then when it's time to bring you back, yeah, you have some very intense reactions.
That's for everybody else in the room. That moment right there.
Yeah. You know, when I jump and scream.
Yes. Yeah.
I just scream bloody murder at the top of my lungs. It is every time.
Everybody does. Yeah, it's just what happens.
Your reaction is a little bit more tame. I'm just full on screaming and jumping, but you know.
Now, what other equipment do you think, you know, best suits your investigations?
A lot of it really kind of comes down to the area you're in too. That's why we have so many different pieces of equipment. Obviously any type of a motion sensor is always good, you know, something that you can fix set. And, you know, so if it goes off and there was no one there, well, then something broke that, you know, something broke that light stream or something. And so those are always good. EMF, which, you know, your K2 where, like when we were out at Tatum House, K2 is measuring for electric frequencies, and there's not an ounce of electrical wiring in that house. So if that's showing up, then
that's
an anomaly for sure, you know, because there's no, you can't be like, oh, well, they've got old wiring when they have no wiring. Right. So, things like that are great. The REM pods are good. We've kind of tried to phase into REM pods that don't make a really loud, shrill noise because you don't know when these people were alive. And so something that lights up or something that has a very shrill noise may sound like an alarm or something that is absolutely scary to them, and they're done, they're out, you know? So, which is also kind of a reason, like when you were there with us, we always announce, okay, these are what these devices are. They're not here to hurt you. You can see us, we can't see you. This helps us know that you're here with us.
Okay. And, so Ryan,
yes.
Can you please describe for our audience who may not know what a REM pod is?
Sure. A REM pod is kind of another, it creates its own, like a little electromagnetic field around it. And so what happens is it's almost like kind of like an electric fence. So if you get within that area, it lights up and will let you know something's there. The closer it gets to that antenna that's in the middle, the brighter the lights get, and it will kind of emit a sound, a beep, whatever it may be. And so the whole idea is that you can use that for like a yes or no, or hey, if someone's here, there's this, you know, there's this device on the floor, it has a little light. If you get near it, a couple more lights will light up. And then that's a great way to determine an intelligent haunting as well, because if they are responding, then now you know kind of what you're dealing with. And again, at Tatum House, when we were all there and it was in the cookhouse, obviously we had a REM pod go off multiple times. And the idea behind that just got to be where it was more residual. We started paying attention to the fact that it was so often, and it didn't matter what we said. And then it also seemed to be time related. So that would have been when all that was happening, would have been very close to what would have been a dinner time or a prep time. So it made sense that that what we're dealing with is a residual, someone that came in there and did their cooking and whatnot at that same time on a very regular basis. So there's a lot of different devices out there. There's a lot of, you kind of, once you start posting things about paranormal and using different equipment, you can quickly determine what's accepted and what's not. SLS cameras are a great one, where it's the camera that uses the Xbox monitor and shows the little stick figure people. You can have some great results with that, but you can also have a lot of false positives. And there's a lot of stuff out there where people are like, oh my God, look at this. Well, if you happen to use it by a window or a ladder, or if you're by a sliding glass door and it picks up that middle frame, you can have a ton of stuff really give you a false positive. Mm-hmm. We have a video that we've talked about doing, and we haven't done it yet. And it was basically just going to use an SLS camera and go around and make kind of light of that, mm-hmm. and just say, oh, it's the slider ghost and the ladder, you know, because literally there are a lot of people that unfortunately don't do their due diligence or research some of the devices, and they're dead sure they've got something. And then they post it on YouTube or they post it on something else and they literally get bashed, you know, which is we'll call it a learning experience. That's, but also it's just it's not something you want to do, because you're like, oh my God, I had this great experience. And then you find out you didn't. Mm-hmm. We did one. It was at a cemetery and I didn't quite pick it up, but it was there was a tombstone that was just out of field of vision through the infrared. So I couldn't see it on the screen, but it was there. And so I was getting this kind of a small figure that looked like maybe a child. And I was super excited. And then later on I took a couple steps forward and it showed up, and then I stepped back, and then someone was like, no, that's a tombstone. Yeah, there was no one there.
But why it was registering it as a person is because it has the rounded top, mm-hmm. which looks like shoulders.
Yeah.
So it's trying to find things that have a human-like shape to it.
Correct. Yeah.
So that's why it will pick up on something like that. Or like he was saying, the sliding glass door, like you have the straight piece in the middle, and you know, it's seeing that as possibly a body, because you were straight in the middle. That's how you are.
There's a lot of tools out there. And a lot of them have, you know, cat balls, the little light up.
I love the cat balls.
It's just such a simple device, but it's basically just picking up the most minute vibration. We have another device, EDI. It'll measure barometric pressure and humidity changes, temperature changes, vibration. So it's really kind of, I think as this game evolves a little bit, not game, but they're trying to find more scientific tools that it makes it harder to just say you're not out there with a, you know, dowsing rods or something like that. And, oh, well, like they crossed. Okay. Well, your hands moved in, you know? And so more, not necessarily a dog and pony show, but where you actually can get very scientific with it. And that's really what I've, that's where I dive in heavy is trying to find those kinds of pieces of equipment and really trying to see how we can retrofit that into to what we do and give us a truer answer, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And it's great that you're able to do that. So by combining your, you know, personal feelings or abilities, adding in with the scientific equipment, what has been your most shocking discovery or location?
Oh gosh. There's
our house.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, that was a good one.
Oh yeah.
We definitely knew, you know, we knew that the house that we live in, it was the husband built it for her.
For his wife. Home. Right. Yep.
And she did die there. And yeah. She is definitely still there.
Yep. Her name is Jen.
Yep. And so we've gotten a lot
Virginia.
But. Yeah. We actually, I mean, the portal, which is basically just taking a spirit box or a SB7, like what we use for the Estes method. And it, takes all of the static out, so all you hear is words. Most of that has always been tested at our house, and so the garage is a great place to test it, and inevitably we'll get responses there. One of my best SLS was was there. But yeah, so again, it just kind of confirmed a few things that we already felt were there. So yeah, I mean, that was an interesting one. And yeah, a lot of our equipment, actually, when we first get it, it gets tested right there at our own home. So
yeah, it does.
So, but again, part of it's residual with a little bit of intelligent, but, you know, so.
But I will say, when we do test the equipment, we make sure always to say when we're done with it, okay, if you were already here, you may stay. If you are somebody or something that is passing through or has just chosen to come in, we're done now and you have to go. This is not where you stay. You know, we're very, very adamant about that. But also very adamant about talking to them like they're people. Like when we go into places and you were there, you know, where we all introduce ourselves, we all say who we are. And then we say, you know, why we're there and that we would like to interact with somebody. And, you know, it is always, it's their choice whether they want to. So I'm really big on being very respectful. I try to get names and I'll literally say, could you please tell me your name? Because I want to make sure I'm properly addressing who I'm speaking with, you know? So that's always really important to me.
Yeah. Well, has any of the investigations taken a darker turn or a more frightening turn?
When we did the Gilcrest Jail, we had decided that, and by we, I mainly mean me, that we were going to stay the night there. Mm-hmm. And so I'll say for the most part during the investigation, it was pretty flat. We didn't have, and by flat, I mean, we just didn't have a lot of responses. We weren't picking up much on motion cameras. We weren't really getting much of a response through the portal or the SB7s, not much on monitor.
Reviewed the evidence, yeah, there were EVPs.
There were some, but the main thing that was, that got really fun for that night was when not we finally fun. Decided to go, all right, it's time, we're gonna lay down, we're gonna go to sleep. We kicked the lights off, we had the air mattresses up, or, you know, everybody's, Mark was there with us as well, and we had laid down and we're all kind of trying to get ready, and that whole place lit up.
It did not go well for me.
What we did is we had one room. It was kind of the officer's room. So we stayed there. And I was like, all right, to make you feel a little better, I'm going to set a motion detector here and a music box here. And
Bad idea.
So if anything potentially is coming towards us, we'll get an alert. Mm-hmm. And then we also had a, it's kind of funny. We downloaded a, it's basically a sleep talking app, which sounds so hilarious, but it works well in this because it will pick up EVPs that you don't really hear. So we had that going, and it took, I'd say, about a half hour for us to really kind of try and relax and go to sleep. And
I did not relax at all.
It the whole room just lit up, and it was less than an hour, and you'd had enough.
The motion sensors were literally going off every couple minutes.
Yeah.
I was like, no, this is not okay. This is not okay.
It took a turn for the worse.
About an hour, I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I literally went out and I stayed in the car the rest of the night.
Aww.
I did.
Which was actually about another hour and a half.
Yeah.
And then we called quits on everything because it didn't stop just when she left.
So. Yeah, no. And I was like, no. Yeah. And I was like, guys, this is not okay. You know, I have like, I'm like, okay, you know, we're here to talk to you. Yes. Interact with us. But while I'm trying to sleep, no, that is not the time. That is also the deal that I have at my house. I tell them, you know, you can be here. That's fine. There is one rule. You don't bother me while I'm sleeping.
Yeah. And
that's it. That is my rule. Do not bother me while I'm sleeping.
We had an Estes method at the Arcadia Opera House where I got somebody a little more mischievous or a little darker. And
yeah,
you were asking questions and I got pulled out of it in a very similar way where you jump because obviously you don't know anybody's there and all of a sudden something touches you. But they were definitely getting a little, interesting.
Dark.
It was
getting dark.
I'm behind you. I'm here to get you.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I was asking the questions
and you said, nope, that's enough.
Yeah.
We're done with this conversation. Broke it and you know, touched my shoulder to let me know.
Yeah.
Cause it ended it.
Yeah. But it literally said, you know, I was asking questions and, he said, I'm right behind you. And I said, okay, well, what are you doing? And it said, I'm taking you. And I said, nope, that's it. Yeah. We're done. This session is over. We are no longer talking. It is not okay for you to say that.
Yeah.
It is not okay for you to take me. You are not welcome to touch me. Yeah. You are not welcome to follow me. You know, you gotta stand your ground sometimes.
But I would say, you know, 99.9% of the time your interaction with anything is not menacing. You know, one of the things that I guess perturbs me the most is you see all these ghost shows and everything's a demon.
It's not,
you know, that's not how it works. Not everything's a poltergeist. Not every time you go on one of these is a coffee cup going to fly at your head. You know, a lot of the times it's just, you got a chance to see it, you know, it's just simple responses, things that you kind of, you can't quite explain, but it's really cool that you just got a chance to witness it.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of it, you're probably going to come away with a half a dozen things that you sit back and you go, I can't believe I just saw that, you know, but at no point in time really is the experience menacing or are they out to get you?
Not in our experience.
There's been a couple times, but you kind of protect yourself a little bit on that.
Yep.
And just like you said, you stop the interaction. Yeah.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
So in your opinion, both of you, why do you think that ghosts exist? Why are they still on this plane of reality?
Oh, here we go.
Did I open up a can of worms?
No.
Well, no. No,
yes.
No, no.
Yes and no.
Well, I have a really interesting take on this, actually. Okay. So, if somebody asked me once, they said, well, you're a Christian. How can you say that there's all these ghosts and there's these spirits and there's all this stuff going on? And I said, well, you know, that is a really interesting question. But first of all, I'd like to ask you, you know, angels are kind of something you don't see, but a lot of people have guardian angel stories. That's okay. You know, they will refer to God as the Holy Ghost. I'm like, oh, you literally just said ghost. And then, I mean, I had someone say, well, you know, that would be terrible if, you know, that somebody was just left here and they're stuck here on earth. You know, it says, you know, God's not going to leave people. And I said, well, what about this? Yeah, it might say that, but what if you get the chance to say, actually, I want to stay here for whatever reason it may be? You know, if you want to stay here to check in on your family, or you want to watch over your house because you have so much joy and even pride in something that you made and put your whole life into. And who's to say that God doesn't say, yeah, you can do that? Or maybe there could be something like, hey, let's make a deal of, okay, you're allowed to go down and check on everybody, you know, twice a month. Who knows? Because stuff isn't always active. It's not, you know, sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. Sometimes there's a rhyme and reason to it. Sometimes there's not. So that's one of my ideas. Go. That's my spiel.
Yeah, I would say she covered a lot of it for me as well. I think a lot of it really comes down to people either A, aren't necessarily ready to give up what they had going on here. I think there's also a tragedy aspect. Someone who dies in a car wreck that was completely unsuspected, they may not even really understand, you know, that they died. They're still there and they're just confused. Then I do believe that there are people who have a tie to an area, and and that was possibly the most important thing to them, and other people are tied to family, whatever it may be. So again, I kind of fall back on my comment much earlier. I don't think we'll ever really know the answer, but when we do, we're on the other side of the EVP, and hopefully maybe one of us will remember well enough and give a better answer. Hey, this is why we do it, you know, but until then, you know, I guess that's kind of the cool mystery of it all. Is it's a tough one to solve, just because, you know, once you do have the answer, you're already there. So, but it does make it very, very interesting from that standpoint. So, but yeah, that's kind of always been it for me.
I like those answers.
Yeah. Well, speaking of mysteries, I'm sure you've heard of very many, you've probably investigated a lot. Do you have a dream location of some place you want to investigate? If you could pick any place in the world, where would you like to investigate?
Go ahead.
I think Tiffany wants this one.
You go first.
Well, the one for me, it's somewhat paranormal, but it's also cryptid, is I've always been unbelievably intrigued by Mothman. And there's more to it that, you know, that one falls on both for me. So without a doubt, I would love to go there, be able to do some, you know, an investigation there at the bridge and see what comes up. So that's just, I don't know, that's the story that always sticks out in my head. So, yeah.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of people who do ghost hunts and things like that, or paranormal investigations out into the TNT area. So I can definitely see your attraction to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Winchester Mansion.
Yes.
For those who may not know.
Bad.
Yeah. For those who may not know, the Winchester Mystery House was built by the widow of the Winchester rifle fortune.
Yep.
And part of it was that she felt that she had to evade a curse of all the people who were killed by the Winchester rifle by continuously and nonstop building on the house.
Yes.
To appease them. So, Tiffany, why do you find an interest in this?
Oh my gosh. I think there is just so much intrigue and mystery there. And even if you didn't get anything, just being able to go there and exploring it and seeing if you can find anything, it's just, I don't know. It's just an amazing draw for me. And that is literally my number one. Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. We did an episode on the Winchester Mystery House. And one of the stories that I liked about it is that during this time, Houdini was going around and disproving a lot of hoaxes and so forth. Yeah. And the story was, is that he toured the seance room and he never said anything about it afterwards. He refused to make any statements about it. So there was one location that he didn't even try and debunk. So I can see why you would like that.
That is great. I just love the old spiritualism movement stories with the Fox sisters and the table tipping and the seances. I won't do a seance. I won't do it. There's a couple things that I won't do. And that's one of them. But I absolutely just love the history and the stories behind it. And listening to podcasts and books and anything I can find on it.
I guess there's one other place I would mention, and it's just because my family and I, we used to take trips out there all the time. And now that I sit back and actually think about it, I would love to go there, is the castle on Jekyll Island in Jekyll Island, Georgia. We used to live on Amelia Island out on Fernandina Beach, and we would take frequent trips over and stay out on and stay out there. So out on Jekyll. And I have a lot of memories of seeing things kind of off over in that area when I was young. I would have been in kindergarten, first grade. So it'd be interesting to be able to go back there and maybe kind of snoop around the yards with some equipment and do that. But yeah, I don't even know if there's a whole lot that even has to do with that. I don't know if it's really even been.
I have no idea.
Investigated that much, but I just remember just kind of sitting back, going through everything in my head. I do remember a lot of interesting events back out there.
Okay, that's cool. Well, you do all of your investigations, then you do all of your research afterwards, putting things together. Where can people find your investigations or find the results from your tours and locations?
We do have a Facebook page, which is Phelan Paranormal, P-H-E-L-A-N for those of you who need the spelling of it. And then we do also have a YouTube channel under the same name. And I personally go over all the evidence every once in a while. Goldie actually helps me with listening to some of it. and I edit them into videos. I have a lot of them that I'm working on right now. We have a lot going on with hurricane repairs still. So there will be an influx of them, but it's probably going to be around mid-January. But we do have about 40 videos up on there right now that everybody can go take a look at. A lot of them are short, sweet, and to the point. That's how I like to do them. Yeah. That's just, here it is, watch it. It's really cool. And it's done. They're, somewhere between 2 and 5 minutes usually.
Yeah, we're not gonna do the big build-up videos or anything like that.
There's a couple that are a little bit longer, but.
Well, I will be sure to post links to both the Facebook page and the YouTube channel on our show notes. So those of you who want to actually see some of these experiences, I recommend you check it out.
And subscribe.
Definitely
And subscribe. And in some of the videos, you can see Gary too. And you'll be hearing Goldie Ann in one of the Estes Method videos that I'm putting together from our Tatum House investigation right now.
Well, great.
Yeah. What about the Gary and leave?
What's that?
The Gary leave.
Oh, yes. through the Necrophonic at the Tatum House. and you listen to it too. I swear it says, and it says a lot of things, but it says Gary, and then a couple minutes later it goes, Gary, leave.
I'm not welcomed anywhere.
Oh,
all right. Well, this has been great.
I'll be lucky enough to have my name come through a spirit box or something. Yeah. They never say my name.
No. Well, this has been great. Yeah. Is there any final words that you would like to have our audience know?
No, I think we've covered a lot of things. I greatly appreciate your time. Thank you for having us on here.
Absolutely.
Oh, no, this was great. And we look forward to having you back because I'm pretty sure, looking through my notes, any of these locations probably would have warranted a whole episode in and of itself. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. We could tell you stories of the Opera House for sure. Yeah.
Well, then we will definitely have to set that up.
Awesome.
Sounds wonderful.
Yep.
Well, being sure to remind the ghosts that it's time for them to go home and that is do not wake us up in the middle of the night. I think it's time for us to make our exit from within the mist. We would like to thank Tiffany and Ryan of Feelin' Paranormal for being our guests today. We hope you enjoyed this episode and our interview, and we'll check out their YouTube channels and Facebook page. But until then, listen closely for the voices in the shadows and remain constantly curious. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.